Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 18th of March. Very nice to have you with us on this blustery day, but it's, I assume it's probably blustery where you are. When I was looking at the map this morning, it seems to be throughout our region.
Right.
Blustery.
I hear from a lot of people who say you're too blustery.
Yeah, right. Well, your conditions may vary. It's very nice to have you all with us. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we will get started on the issues of the day. We have a lot to talk about. Very busy news day last night and overnight, so we'll talk to you about all of that. First, we welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm just good.
I am just good. I'm not going any further than that. I'm just good.
I have a lot on my plate today. It's just too much.
It's busy. All right. Let's go elsewhere to our good friend Barbara Smith is here. Essayist, author, editor, activist, and she is with us this morning as well. Good morning, Barbara. How are you?
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Very nice to have you back. And political consultant Libby Post with us this morning as well. Doing her her Wednesday duty.
Yes. My, I don't know, contrition, is that what it's called? I'm not sure. But yes.
Yeah, I believe that's what we call it.
Is that what we call it? Okay, fine.
Here's how you all can get involved. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And I guess you all. I guess that comes from being born below the Mason-Dixon line.
Or making a move in a big truck.
That's right. I was going to go there, too.
You all.
You all.
You all. Yes.
Puns.
Yes. We like those on the show. Okay, so let's get started. Reminder, roundtable@WAMC.org. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can also go to our website, which is WAMC.org/roundtable, and we have a post up there that'll say 3/18/15. If you click on it, all kinds of magical things happen, and you can be a part of the conversation and post your comment, and then other people can post their comments, and it's a very nice interactive dialogue that will take place if you let it. Okay, so let's go, if you allow it to. It's all on you, really. Let's go to the top news story, obviously something that we've been talking about for the past several weeks, but Benjamin Netanyahu wins decisive victory in Israeli elections. There was a point last night where they were saying it was too close to call, and then the exit polls said, well, there's one poll that says that he had a clear win. There was another poll that said it was maybe a slim defeat. And yet, when all the dust settled, he won in a very sound victory in the Israeli election. Mm. And just so this is somewhat, well, not confusing exactly, but his party won a clear and decisive victory in Israel's parliamentary elections, paving the way for him to serve a record-breaking fourth term as prime minister. They overcame a strong challenger from his main opponent, Labour Party leader Isaac Herzog. And now there will be the point of actually working on forming the government and these various coalitions, although that'll be made somewhat easier by the margin of victory.
I told you yesterday, Joe, for whatever it's worth, I suggested anyway, that in the end, security, in quotes, trumps everything. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what Bibi Netanyahu did as he scrambled to win this victory. He said, as long as he was prime minister, at the last moment, even though he had been saying that, you know, a two-state solution was possible, at the last minute he said, no two-state solution while I'm here. Okay. That really did go directly to the nationalistic instincts of Israelis. And I may have to say something which will annoy people, but I'll say it anyway. It's one thing for me to think that a two-state solution is a good idea. But I don't live in Israel. Mm-hmm. I don't live there. And so they have a different theory, a different sense of what security involves. However, I've been sitting here thinking about this whole thing and thinking, you know, one of the reasons Israelis have been decisive militarily when attacked has been that there's always the absolute knowledge that the United States will not let them fail. Mm. Now you see this dissonance between the President of the United States and Netanyahu. And I don't know, frankly, whether that encourages some of the people who would drive Israel into the sea to try it again. You know, one thinks not. One thinks that no matter what happens, the United States will be there for Israel while all of this goes on. But it is possible that this could fall into one of those situations where, you know, be careful about what you get, because you may have unintended consequences that come out as a result of this. So personally, disappointed. But in fact, I have to say that I understand if there are people who live in Israel and who, you know, are under those guns and under all of the rest of it, I understand what security means to them, just like what security means to people in the United States.
Do you think that would work here? Because yesterday you called it a Hail Mary pass, and it worked.
It did work. And I said it was a Hail Mary pass, but I also pointed out, you will remember,
yes,
that security trumps everything.
Right.
And sometimes those three-point shots go in, as we
That's
saw
right.
this week
right.
or on Saturday. You know, this is disappointing. You know, but when you look at the numbers, yes, it's what they call a decisive win when, you know, they have 26, I think, out of 120 seats in the parliament, or 29 or 30, whatever it is, you know, and but the other guys have 24. But, you know, according to the Times story this morning, from a political point of view, you know, we're going to have this guy Moshe Kalan, former Likud member, minister who broke away to form Kalanu, which means all of us. He's going to be this pivot point. You know, the fact of the matter is, people might say yes to security, but there are issues in Israel going on. There are economic issues going on and housing issues going on, and those have to be dealt with. We had 100,000 people in Tel Aviv, you know, protesting against Netanyahu's policies. And so, you know, I too, and I'm very clear about this, as you are, Alan, I understand the need for security. I understand the need. There's no question in my mind that Israel is an important ally and needs to exist, as far as I'm concerned. I do think, however, push comes to shove, the United States will be there. There's too much money involved. There's too many political interests involved in this country not to be
there. I absolutely agree with that. I think, just to clarify, that my point was that not everybody will understand that.
That's right.
And
That's
it
right.
may well be that some of the troublemakers over there who want to throw a bomb or want to throw this or that may misinterpret what this relationship between Netanyahu and the president means, and figure we won't be there with our warships as we have. By the way, we've been there a couple of times when it could have gone either way.
There's a big J Street conference this weekend.
J Street, for those who don't know, is the sort of peace side of Israel.
Right. The lobby here, the answer to AIPAC, the American Israel Political Action Committee. And I'm not going, but it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that convention, the conversations that are going to happen.
One more thing, if I can, and I really want to get Barbara in on the conversation, but one more thing that that occurs to me, and that is that this is messy. I mean, this is really, really
messy. It's never not been messy.
Yeah. So
ever.
Well, since after World War II. I mean, it was messy before, but
it's never
messy. That Israel was constructed had conflict and failure built in.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's the reality of the situation. I mean, it's
no, there needed to be
Israel needed to be. You know,
exactly.
I was talking to my rabbis on Monday. We were, you know, my weekly meeting with the rabbis, and I made the statement about
like the Queen of England.
That's right.
And
yes.
The prime minister.
That's right. That's right.
You're the head of the
and they made a statement that
corgis.
You know, Obama, right? Yeah, no, Obama got in trouble early on because he said that Israel was established because of what happened, because of the Holocaust, and that wasn't the case. The things were already going, but this was the opportunity to make it happen.
But it was a big part of the rationale
absolutely.
For the state of Israel,
absolutely.
And one of the reasons why, because we get mail here saying that that the Israelis are guilty of apartheid. Well, if you introduce the Holocaust rationale into this, that is what makes a difference, to me at least.
Me too.
Well, I have a different point of view. I'm not an expert on Israeli political situation, not far from it, but I just feel that I've always had stance on these issues that took into account the indigenous people there, Palestinians. And it's just, you know, for him to make the statement that there will never be a Palestinian state or a two-state solution, I just find that completely unacceptable. And I think a lot of people share my point of view. Yeah. I was looking at Jewish Voice for Peace. We have a chapter here in Albany, and I was looking for other perspectives on this issue besides the articles that we are sharing and looking at the same time. And I went to The Nation to see what I could find there. But I just feel that we can't overlook the human rights implications of the current situation. And there are a lot of people in Israel, as I understand it, who want peace.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
there's no question. Yes.
That's why, I mean,
23
Herzog's,
seats.
Yeah, Herzog's party got 20 seats. I mean, you know, there's going to be power brokering going on. I don't think it's as cut and dry as everyone is saying it.
Well, Libby, I want to respond to that. I was trying to remember what I was thinking here. Not always easy. That Netanyahu, I believe, as long as it came close, whether he won or not, was going to be the next prime minister. And the reason for that is that the dissident parties, there are more to the right left.
Yes.
So in the end, and I don't think they wanted to do this as a democracy, in the end, the president of Israel was going to have to call on one of two of them to organize the government. And I have a feeling, and it had been widely surmised, that Netanyahu would be the prime minister no matter what.
A lot of people were saying that.
And to Barbara's point, there are those who would argue that the concept of the indigenous folks, and I'm not saying that it's somebody who would argue that there weren't indigenous Palestinians, this was part of Egypt, and that this has all been as a result of Israeli policy. There are those people who would argue that with you, Barbara, but what do I know?
Well, clearly we're not going to solve it this morning.
No, we never do. We're not going to solve this morning, and no one's going to solve it in a while.
And we can try.
Yeah.
So that's long term. So in the 2 minutes that we have before we go to a break, short term, what are we looking at?
Short term, Netanyahu continues. Mm-hmm. You have him throwing a pie in Kerry's face, a pie in the President of the United States' face.
And with the help of the Republican Congress.
That's right. It is, as Andrew Cuomo has been known to say, it is what it is.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, when Netanyahu made the statement about no two states, you know, the Republicans in Congress, their knickers got in a twist because they were touting, he's going to be our partner for peace. Well, clearly that's not the case. And so they're on the losing end of this now. I mean, they were on the losing end of this right from the start, but now they really are on the losing end of this. And, you know, we all just have to wait and see. My hope is that there's not going to be any more conflict in terms of bombs going off, missiles being sent, troops being deployed.
But you know that that's not going to happen.
It is going to happen. I know.
And Robert and Bob writes to us and says, Bibi's win guarantees unending conflict with Israel's neighbors and more annexation of Palestinian land for illegal settlements. That's what the Israelis have the right to vote for. But remind me, why the U.S. has to support them in their choice? Alan, you're a big Israel supporter, but when is enough enough? Can the answer really be never? Hey, Bob, I take some exception to your letter. I just want you to know it. It's an incisive letter, but the truth is, I didn't think Netanyahu should win. I also think there should be a two-state solution, even though it brings with it tremendous danger. All I said was, I'm sitting here and they're sitting there.
And there are those of us who, Alan and I, you know, feel very strongly that the state of Israel has an absolute right to exist. And that, for me, is the number one platform.
Raison d'etre.
Right. That's you know, there's no argument. There's no debating that issue. And then we go on from there. But I do think there's a way to create a peaceful solution. We just need to have people who want to have peace. And that's the question.
And we can't succumb to those who would always say that there are few people on the other side, some leadership or some, who would damage a two-state solution. I think that's true. But on the other hand, you have to live with those people now. You'd set up a two-state solution, and then you live with them then.
Right. And, you know, in time, things move. Things change.
We got a little work to make up, so we'll do that, and we'll be back with our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this news break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let me reintroduce our panel just to remind you, if you're just joining us, who's on the panel, and then we'll tell you how you can get in on our conversation. Alan will have some letters, and then we'll get into some other topics as well. Alan Chartok is here. Barbara Smith joins us, as does Libby Post. You can join us, roundtable at WAMC.org, or through our website, WAMC.org/roundtable, where there is a post that says WAMC.org/roundtable31815. Click on that, and you can be a part of the conversation that way. We have quite a few letters about our discussion on Israel.
We do, and some of them certainly disagree with what you've heard here today, at least from some of us. So Mary says, right to exist does not mean right to expand into the West Bank, destroying Palestinian homes and lives. How does the mistreatment of millions of people contribute to security? There is ample historical data tracing Palestinian population back for centuries. Those who argue a land without a people basis on an obscure Mark Twain quote that is totally meaningless. And Jill says, yes, Israel absolutely has the right to exist, but don't the Palestinians have a right to exist in a homeland of their own? I fear with Netanyahu's win, with him saying there will never be a Palestinian state, will be open season on Israel from the radicals, radical Palestinians and their supporters, and open season on the retaliation from Israel for many innocent Palestinians. And let's see, I know there are some others here. Yeah. Okay, so Bonnie, if Netanyahu sees no use for a two-state solution, why should the world support even one state? Zionists, who have treated Palestinians worse than South Africa did blacks, seem to have forgotten their history. Let's see. We did that one. I'm sorry, folks. I know that you get impatient with me, but this isn't an easy job to figure out.
Right. This writing, reading stuff is not an easy
job. Robert,
you
should have one at the top there. Robert?
Robert, I think we did. Israel's absolute right to exist, backed up by U.S. might, is like a grade school bully backed up by his much bigger brother. Where is the incentive for the bully to ever stop? And then Julius said, so what do you make of Bibi's very clear declaration during the speech to Congress that Israel is strong enough to stand alone? And Jay says, how would the Republicans who supported Netanyahu's speech feel if Obama had urged out minority voters by saying too many white people are voting? This is ominous. Anybody else understand that one?
Can you say that again?
Yeah. How would the Republicans who supported Netanyahu's speech feel if Obama had urged out, that's what it says, minority voters by saying too many white people are voting?
Are you saying if Obama had encouraged?
I understand this. I think this refers to the Netanyahu fear expressed during the election that too many Israeli-Palestinians who are Israeli citizens would be voting. Yeah,
it's more like if George Wallace got up and said, there are too many black people voting, us whites need to go and vote.
Right, that's a parallel to be made.
Okay, did Barbara say indigenous? Aren't the Jewish people the indigenous? They were there 5,000 years ago, the promised land, remember? P.S., this is not Michael who criticized Joe last week.
This is a different Michael.
Joe
altogether.
Is the greatest radio man in the business. Love you, Joe.
Well, love you, Michael. Thank you.
All right. And Will says, in a two-party system like ours, polls are essentially either or. In a parliamentary system, especially with Israel's plethora of parties, the slightest variation in polls can lead to an unexpected outcome. This was probably an honest election. Well, it depends what you mean by honest, but yeah, it was an honest election, I think. Bibi threw the bomb, and it landed.
Right.
It worked. And Jim says, Americans re-elected Bush, so Israelis aren't the only fools in their choice of a leader. However, Israel has made its choice, and they have decided to no longer be a partner for peace. I'm tired of Israel being the tail wagging the dog, telling the U.S. how to conduct our foreign policy. Time for the U.S. to speed up our pivot from the Middle East. And that, my friends, I believe is what I've got.
All right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We move on to another story. A fraternity at Penn State University has been suspended as authorities investigate allegations that members of the group maintained a private Facebook page where they allegedly posted photos of partially naked women, hazing, and drugs. According to an NBC affiliate in West Central Pennsylvania, police said a victim discovered the website, which appeared to be linked to the Kappa Delta Rho fraternity, and had photographs of partially clothed women who were asleep or passed out. Police printed out pages from the site, but according to a search warrant obtained by the NBC affiliate, computers belonging to members and the Facebook site had been wiped of the images.
I don't know what to say. I mean, when are we living? Where are we living? What century? And the technology, of course, makes the invasiveness and the objectification so much worse. I mean, the very idea that they would think that was something to do.
Now, the last time you were with us a week ago, we were talking about the Oklahoma fraternity situation.
Right.
So now we talk about the Penn State fraternity situation. So now I will let both Libby and Barbara talk about your overall thoughts about fraternities.
They shouldn't be allowed on campus. Period. End of story. They are an anachronism of sexual stereotyping that we grew up with that is should no longer be how we treat one another. Women are always objectified in these situations. I worked on the SUNY Task Force on Sexual Assault. There were so many of these incidences that are happening within these frat houses, and some say, well, they're off campus and blah, 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 so it's not,
it's
you
not
know,
a
campus,
crime.
It's not a crime, it's not a campus situation, blah, blah, blah. You know, we don't hear, and maybe this is the, you know, the frats need to market better, but you only hear these horrible stories about these frats and these women being victimized, and it's time for it to stop. You know, and I don't support sororities either, to be quite honest with you. I don't support any of these same-sex
organizations. Well, when you say we only hear it about, what do you mean?
Well,
when we only hear, because we hear it about in other factions of college life and our daily life.
Right, but the big stories are always, this is what happens at a frat house. Somebody's been raped, somebody's been abused, somebody, you know, and that's the problem. I mean, we had the racism last week in Oklahoma. We have this. There's just these the culture of fraternities are so pro frat boy drinking excess. Let's have fun regardless of whatever anything happens to anybody.
For others.
There are a gazillion people out there right now, people who went through fraternities who are good people, saying my old thing that I have quoted a number of times, for example, stinks. You get a murder in New York, doesn't mean everybody is getting murdered. Now, I have to say, with that said, I agree with your basic philosophy. I think the idea of going to a university is a place where you learn from others and is intellectual. And you don't immediately, and we've seen this, and we've all of us who are teachers see this immediately. You go into a classroom and like-minded people tend to sit together. It's very interesting, yeah.
You were a professor on the SUNY campuses.
Yes.
Before they let the frats back on in 1984. I was a student.
Yep.
Both at SUNY Buffalo and SUNY Albany. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
The culture was different.
I went to Hunter College in the Bronx. They had something called house plans. And house plans were basically fraternities. It was places where people, you know, like-minded people could go. And I eschewed it all. I thought it was terrible because I just. But there are people who are around to this day who will tell you that those relationships and friends that they made are the best things that ever happened to them in their lives.
So maybe instead of looking at fraternities as the problem and the most serious and worst example of sexism and misogyny, maybe we should look at it as a societal issue. I was watching MSNBC this morning, not listening to NPR, I must admit.
Give it a pass.
And there was a young...
Alan's an occasional morning people right, watcher.
Right,
that's okay.
It's visual.
Right. There was a young man on, and they were talking about this Penn State situation and what happened at the University of Oklahoma last week, too. And he said, what we're seeing is like boys clubs. And he extended it to the NFL. Was that a basketball player or... I can't remember.
NFL.
Yeah, he extended it to, and then he included the Secret Service, which is like, oh my goodness, did he really say that? But when he was talking about bad behavior in all male context and what that
It starts with the treehouse where it says no girls allowed.
And then
at 6 and 7, and then it just grows from there.
Indeed. But as I said, why don't we look at it as a social issue? I have heard discussions when some of these incidents around sexual violence occur about what are we teaching our boys and young men about who women are and what females are here on the planet.
While certainly new details have emerged about the Duke situation, the Duke lacrosse players, it was still a situation where you had a team and of a party getting out of hand, where the allegations, and again, there has been some new details that have changed the narrative on that story. However, I'm also curious about just this idea of not just fraternities or sororities, but also, as you say, like-minded people. Alan, you said, we'll sit together. So even within the sports context of you have institutionally at Penn State a situation where you had a pedophile on your staff for 10, 12 years, and everybody just turned a blind eye to it.
Right.
And that to me is not only – now, can you put those two incidents together of Penn State? I don't know.
No, but it's culture.
It speaks to the culture. Right. And that is putting it together, isn't it?
Boy.
I mean, I just think that when you look at a situation where, to me, the biggest the tragedy of the case of Jerry Sandusky in Penn State was that this went on. A lot of people knew about it. The victims came forward eventually, and were obviously traumatized by the situation. And here was a guy who was sort of let go and still allowed access.
Right, indeed.
But, I keep thinking about... The victims in this, because believe me, I think we don't concentrate enough on what happened
to people, and
how important this victimization is. But I also wonder about the people who committed these atrocities. Atrocities isn't too big a word.
Depending on what the offense
yes,
is.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and I wonder. If you could take them, this is almost science fiction. If you could take them from the time that they were there making a decision to put victimized, semi-naked and naked women onto their Wi-Fi or whatever you're calling it,
Facebook, their
pages, and knowing if you could bring them up to the future in their heads. That this was going to ruin their lives forever, that they were going to be defined by this forever, whether the jerks would do it.
Well, the thing about oppression is that people don't think in that way. I mean, last week it was hanging an N-word from a tree.
Right.
That's not a human being. You wouldn't want it to happen to your brother, your cousin, your father.
Right.
You wouldn't want the sexual assault and the rape to happen to your sister, your partner, your wife, your mother. The thing is, you make categories of people who it's all right to abuse. And that's really a big disconnect. It's like, when do people realize that anyone who has nerve endings, who can be hurt or harmed, is to be treated the way you would wish to be treated? In other words, not brutalized, not hurt. Most people, it's like... everything that has to do with violence.
But I realize we're now going into a very large topic here, and I don't want to veer off too much because we have other stuff to talk about. But that whole idea of that the victimization, where, as Alan pointed out just a moment ago, that is so often put off to the side. And I understand some of that's for privacy. Some of that is for is the difficulty of having a victim come forward and describe the experience that they've gone through. But also the reason that so often it seems to me the reason so often that there is a concern on the part of the abused is that they have such an uphill fight to have people
absolutely.
To believe them.
Right. Absolutely.
And why is that? Why are they the ones?
Because
that have
it's
to
how
fight so
the
hard?
World views women.
Right.
Women are still add-ons.
Right. I agree with you, except that it also comes into children. It comes into male and female teens who are abused on campus in this particular situation at Penn State. Yes, of course, it is women, but it is also there are other abuse victims here as well.
Are you talking about at Penn State?
Well,
I was talking about
young kids. I was
right.
talking about young boys. Right. I was talking about. I mean, if
right.
we want to talk about the Catholic uh-huh. Church. We want to talk whatever mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. We're talking about there are many many sections of this of society. I agree with you certainly with the case of women, but it's not exclusive to that.
Yes, but overall, I agree with Barbara. Certainly this is a terrible thing. But I also understand why, and it's a mistake, why a woman who had been videotaped was not going to want her parents or other people to see
mm-hmm.
this. And that makes it very difficult to come forward also. But that fits right into your paradigm, Barbara, of what has happened to women in America.
The thing about the abuser and the abused, whether the abused are women or young children or whatever, is the abuser, 9 times out of 10, has the power and is a male.
And may likely have been abused.
Right. May have been abused themselves, but they have power. You know, men, men have power. I mean, when I see about, you know, oh, we need a men's rights movement or we need a white people's pride march, you know, I'm like, you have it all already, you know, but
celebrate in your victory.
Yeah, right.
And
just
get on
you know,
with
revel
it.
And move on. But, you know, it's, we need to recognize the shame. And the shaming of the victims that happens.
Yeah.
And the, well, why was she there? She was wearing the wrong thing. Well, she shouldn't have drank that much.
Why did she drink? Yes.
You know, blah, 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 blah. Instead of the boys being responsible for their behavior.
And particularly if they're sports, you know, athletes. Oh, yeah. There's been some cases when it's high school students. We're not in fraternities.
Well,
they're
right.
high school students, but they're part of a team that's like
right.
a
there was admired. Football players in Ohio, I think.
Right, I was going to say, my home state.
Well, and then the bullying as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To which we have a very quick answer from...
Okay, I have to
you got to take a break?
I got to take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll do the letters, if that's okay. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMT comes from Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Cosmetic dentistry utilizing Invisalign where teeth can be orthodontically moved without braces. PaduladDDS.com. And Amtrak, announcing the Adirondack Winter Getaway Package for travel Thursday through Monday on the Adirondack, serving New York, Albany, Montreal through April 27th. Some blackout dates apply. Amtrak.com. And the ADK Cafe, a delicious kitchen in Key, New York, serving home-cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. The ADKCafe.com.
Thank you.
morning, and good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Barbara Smith, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok here. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Not surprisingly, our frat conversation got a couple people writing and responding.
I'm so, surprised.
We'll read that those letters.
So James says, I agree it's a society problem with these kids and their parents. I'm a young 20-some male, and I had a great mother and father taught me right that women and girls are to be respected, etc. Papa, would scold me for any ill treatment towards girls or anyone. And frankly, these jackanapes make the good guys out there look bad. There are some decent males out there.
I agree.
Okay.
And we raised one, so I just want to put it out there. and so did Alan.
Yes. Joe said, sorry to burst the bubble. Humans wrote the Bible, so humans got to decide who's indigenous and who isn't. Only 5,000 years on part Cherokee, and my people were here for 12,000 years. Netanyahu is like Teddy Roosevelt, who said roughly, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. White men came to this country to escape oppression and claimed it was all theirs. Mr. Yahoo is like Andrew Jackson, who created the Trail of Tears. And Janine says, I agree it's societal. Sports teams are no better. Groups of men across socioeconomic status seem to be more likely to treat women poorly when together. And it is worse when substance abuse is involved. It is culturally acceptable to objectify women, television, music, and video games. Boys grow up thinking of women like property, something to take, use, and show off. It starts young. And Jim says, last semester sororities at my daughter's upstate, did I say this one, in SUNY school, held a march rally opposing on campus sexual violence. They were mocked by a large number of frat, quote, boys. Combined with smashed doors and windows of some frat houses and excessive barfing off their porches, recent anthropological studies have shown that among homo fraternus, reverse evolution may be taking place.
Did you say homo sapiens?
No, homo fraternius.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Meaning, it was a little play on words.
Yeah. Okay.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cleverness.
That there are species unto themselves.
Right. Okay.
And Ryan says the issues relating to frats are despicable, but Libby really say it starts with boys at 7, not letting girls hang out with them? Why can't boys hang out together? Girls form cliques as well, not just boys. Libby sounds like she's blaming all men for a few bad apples. Give me a break.
No, that's not what you said.
I didn't really hear that.
What you said was that when you put
the treehouses
and you put the sign up that says no girls allowed.
That's where it starts. It's how our culture expresses itself and where how the boys learn. I mean, I saw that on Little Rascals, you know, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
A lot of racial stereotypes on Little Rascals.
Yes, there were. But, you know, when you're a kid and it's only Channel 11 and it's all, you know, you only have 3 or 4 channels to choose.
Right.
We remember the three channels.
Yes.
We certainly did. And I loved Six Gun Playhouse. Remember Six Gun Playhouse?
No.
Every afternoon
that
on Channel 11.
That must have been local.
That must have been.
Where you were.
In New York City.
That must have been a lot. I mean, you know. When TV first started?
I
wasn't alive then.
Let's put it this way.
None of us were alive when the Little Rascals started, for God's sake.
1949.
Yeah, right. I wasn't around for a little while yet.
The Admiral Television we had.
Yeah.
The Admiral Television.
We had one of the Magnavox.
We had Admiral because the lady up on the 14th floor said that she made us all sign, if we watched her television, that we had to, with her kid, that we had to agree to certain principles, one of which were no shoes being thrown at the television. And my mother said, okay, I'm going out to buy a television right now. No shoes at the television.
Well, the screens were so small and thick, you couldn't have...
Well, was that a thing in your house where you would throw the shoe at the TV?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was just stupid.
That's right. All right, we're out of time. Many thanks to everyone. We are out of time. And no time to talk about Donald Trump launching an exploratory committee.
But yay for the Presbyterians.
Yes.
Presbyterians allowing gay marriage.
Right.
As part
yay
of their,
for them.
Part of their...
Very huge. Yeah. Very important.
Okay. We are out of time, but I do want to thank everyone and thank you for being here. We'll continue the program and we'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.